I'd like to take a moment now to introduce and to turn the evening over to our moderator for the panel discussion, the thinking man's pundit, a man who has worked tirelessly on toxics use reduction. He is a professor of work environment at the University of Massachusetts, Lowell, where he teaches environmental and occupational health policy. At the university, he also serves as the director of the Massachusetts Toxics Use Reduction Institute and acts as the co-director for the Lowell Center for Sustainable Production. Please join me in welcoming Professor Ken Geiser.
Well, thank you, and good evening as well. It's a great pleasure to be here and see so many friends for a chance to debrief and discuss the role of science in environmental health policy and to reflect on last night's PBS special. Before I open this evening and turn this over to what I think is just a remarkable panel that's been brought together this evening, I'd like to say a few words myself about my own reaction to last night. And because it was late last night, I wrote this up, so bear with me. But I did have a fairly strong reaction to what I thought was an excellent presentation. Last night's PBS special was certainly impressive. We learned about the hazards of a gigantic industry devoted to materials development. Not only did we get a glimpse of how dangerous some of the products are, but we also saw how much more hazardous these substances have become because of corporate efforts to withhold research findings, misinterpret information, and lobby to resist public oversight. And yet, as impressive as the show was, I was struck at how dated it seemed. We were left with the impression that more chemical testing and more right-to-know data access are the true solutions. Indeed, it would be natural to conclude from the show that what we need more of is, well, more science. We need to test chemicals more. We need to test human bodies for burden more. We need to study systemic and synergistic chemical effects more. And we need to warn workers, communities, and citizens about the hazards of the chemical industry. We need more health science, fair and independent science to be sure, but more health science just the same. Now, I would agree that we need more fair and independent science, and that is really the subject of tonight's really remarkable panel. But the science that I believe we need more of is actually not represented so well on this panel, and that's the material sciences. Please understand, if over the next decade we rely only on our health sciences, we will certainly know more about the condition of our health and the multiple ways that we are victims of the chemical industry and its products. But teaching people about how they are victimized has never been enough to move them toward fundamental solutions that could really, truly enhance their life prospects. During the 1990s, we fought long and hard for right-to-know provisions in this country. And during the 1990s, we struggled hard for chemical testing. Of course, we certainly do need more chemical testing and more data, but those are old battles. No, the sciences that we are now so underdeveloped are not the sciences of analysis, but the sciences of solutions. We need to develop sciences that provide alternatives to the barrage of poisonous chemicals that have been unleashed upon us by a chemical industry eager to reap profits from the waste streams of the petroleum industry. We need chemical, physical, and biological sciences that mine our understanding of human health and the functioning of the planetary environment to replace the toxic and hazardous materials of today with a new generation of safer and cleaner materials that do not poison us as they benefit us. We need to move beyond studies of how damaged we are. Instead, we need to use that same knowledge to help us phase out the production and use of carcinogens, reproductive toxins, mutagens, endocrine disruptions, and allergens, and replace them with materials that are more comfortably fit into the ecological systems of the planet. Indeed, in 1989, Massachusetts was one of the few places in the world that took a bold initiative to directly confront the use of toxic chemicals. As many of you know, in that year, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts established the State Toxics Use Reduction Program to promote the reduction in the use of hundreds of toxic chemicals and in their waste streams. This law required the state's largest polluting firms to report annually on the use of toxic chemicals and to plan on reducing or eliminating their use. The law empowered the Department of Environmental Protection, the Office of Technology Assessment, and the Toxics Use Reduction Institute at the University of Massachusetts to work with over 900 firms to identify and implement toxics use reduction strategies. That program is now a decade old. Last year, the state reported that over a nine-year period, the amount of toxic chemicals released as waste from those firms has been cut by 48%. And the amount of chemicals used in Massachusetts, toxic chemicals used in Massachusetts, has been cut by a third, even as the economy has grown. Indeed, an independent evaluation of the program has shown that many firms actually increased the amount of money they made because of changes in their toxic chemical configurations. This was not merely an engineering feat. It required those of us in government, in communities, and industry not simply to document the hazards of toxic chemicals, but to identify their potential alternatives and to seek to implement the least harmful amongst them. In Europe, this approach has often been called the precautionary approach. A precautious approach reorganizes the way we think about science. Under this intellectual system, we use a more holistic, multidisciplinary, and inclusive approach to gather data and interpret it. We shift the burden of risk from those who would propose hazardous, shift the burden of risk onto those who would propose hazardous behaviors, and we seek to prevent harm long before the tumors are formed, the DNA is damaged, and the bodies are accumulated. So I would like to open this panel tonight with a friendly challenge to my colleagues. My challenge is to consider not only how science may be manipulated and corrupted by the short-term interests of corporations, speculators, and political opportunists, but to consider what kind of science will be needed if we are to move beyond simply documenting our endangerment and commit ourselves to a science that truly guarantees a safer and healthier world. With those comments, I have the wonderful privilege of turning this over to people that I have, some of whom I've shared podiums with many times and have great respect for. It's an honor for me to serve as a moderator with you all tonight. We have six speakers. We've asked them, any one of whom could speak for an hour. I've heard some of them speak for much longer than that. We've asked them to speak for 10 minutes alone so that we can get through all six speakers, and then we will have what I hope will be a lively discussion from your questions afterwards. Unfortunately, our first speaker, Dr. Sheldon Krimsky, has to leave to attend his son's recital. But I think you all understand how important something like that might be.